king, that's King David. And 1 Kings tells about the third king, and that is King Solomon. That's a pretty good way of remembering, especially if you'll recognize the Jews did not name the book of 1 Samuel, 1 Samuel. That's the name that has been given to it by others. They call 1 Samuel, 1 Kings. They call 2 Samuel, 2 Kings. And what we call 1 Kings, they call 3 Kings. And if that doesn't confuse you, just hang on and we'll say that again and again. Now then, let's take a minute and look at this card. What do you have here? Well, you have here, I think, one of the treasures that will come out of the study of the soldiers of Christ. If I could get you just to open it up and look at the side that says the books of history, and then right at the top you need to have the words United Kingdom. You have that? Are we all on that same page now? So that we're all there. And right under that you ought to have King Saul, King David, and King Solomon. Are we all together there? Still need some cards here in this section here, in this middle section. Any more cards left? We totally missed some of those here in the middle section. So look at that. And while these others are getting cards, since they're so smart, they'll be able to catch up anyway. Look here at the lower left-hand corner of this. Just stay with me so we don't waste a lot of time doing this. But it is really, really important. You see the asterisk down there? There's a place where there's one. Right under that, there's a place where there's two. And then there's an asterisk where there are three asterisks. What do those mean? Well, read the first one. The dates in parentheses indicate a period of co-regency in which two kings reigned simultaneously on the throne. And that's important whenever you look up here the dates of the king's reign. Sometimes you'll have a date, and in parentheses by it, you will have another date. And that is because oftentimes as the king got older, he'd just go ahead and make his son to be king. And so there was a co-regency. That son reigned as a king, though officially his father was still the king. And so that's a co-regency in relationship to that. And you will see that all the way through. You'll particularly see it in the northern kingdom. Now then, look at the second asterisk. The second asterisk says, the prophets' names in bold are the writing prophets. And so when you look up here where you have the list of the prophets, you're going to read about a prophet by the name of Zechariah. His name is not in bold. There's another time that you'll read about the prophet Zechariah, and his name will be in bold because there were two men who were named Zechariah, who were prophets that are mentioned in the Bible. And so you have a list of the prophets that lived during this period of time, but those who are the writing prophets, for example, Elijah and Elisha, they were not writing prophets, though they were really, really important prophets. Now the third thing that's there, the asterisk there is, four kings of Judah were righteous throughout their reign. And so we've got that indicated because it's important for us to know the names of those four kings. Now then, continue to look at the card. Look at the left-hand column. You have as a heading there, the Northern Kingdom. Are you with me? You see the word Northern Kingdom? And the first king there is Jeroboam. Stay on the left-hand side. And as you come down, you will see the names of all of the kings of the northern kingdom. When you get down to the bottom, there are 19 kings of the northern kingdom. You with me on the left-hand column? When you get to the bottom of the left-hand column, you've got the year 722 B.C. That is the date of the ending of the northern kingdom. And so you've got a date when the northern kingdom ends. It's called the fall of Samaria, the capital city. They're the fall of Israel, and they're taken captive to Assyria. On the right-hand side, you have the kings of the southern kingdoms. The southern kingdom was named Judah. And so you've got the kings of the southern kingdom. And the reason there are gaps and spaces in the left-hand column is because we have tried to put the king side by side whenever that particular king would be reigning. For example, if you look, the fourth king of Israel, of Judah, on the right-hand column is Jehoshaphat. Right above him is a large space where there's no name of a king, and that's because Asa, that king, reigned 41 years, and over here in the southern kingdom, the kings are reigning 2 years and 7 days and 12 years. So what you have here is a timeline that is just spaced left and right in relationship to that. When you get to the bottom of that right-hand column, you have the year 612 B.C. If you will flip up that column, you now are looking, flip up that column, you then have other kings in the southern kingdom, and finally you have 606 B.C. as the time when Nebuchadnezzar comes to destroy that. On the left-hand side, when you flip up this bottom fold, flip up the bottom fold, there are no kings of the northern kingdoms because the northern kingdom ended in 722 B.C. Now then, we'll talk some more about what's in the middle column on the back, but have a look at that map. I believe one of the great, great things that would really help you understand the Bible is to memorize this map well enough when you hear the name of a city or the name of a nation, you know exactly where that is. And so there is the map, and there are numbers that coincide with the words on the left-hand column, the key to this. For example, number one that you see on the map, giving the location of it, in the left-hand column says Israel, and then in parentheses you have the word Samaria. That's the capital city, and you have Ephraim, the other name by which Israel is sometimes referred to by the prophets. And so you've got number two would be Judah, number three would be Syria with its capital city of Damascus, and then number four is important because that is Assyria. And look on the map, show you where see where Assyria is on that map. It's in Iraq, and that's where the northern tribe was taken captive. In parentheses, by Assyria, you have the capital city of Nineveh. And so you need to associate Nineveh, Assyria. You need to associate the capital city with the nation. It'll really help you as you come to understand the Bible. And the other one there is Babylon. The name of the city is Babylon. The name of the nation is Babylon. And so know where number five is in relationship to that. You got it? One other time through this. You open it up. You've got the United Kingdom when you have King David and King Saul and King Solomon across the top. With the death of Solomon, the kingdom is divided into a northern kingdom that is on the left-hand column. And there are the 19 kings of the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel. On the right-hand side of this page, you have the 19 kings of the southern kingdom. And there's a notation about how long they reign. There's a third column there that's called prophets, and that's the prophets that prophesied during the reign of those kings. And we'll be saying a lot more about that as we get on in the study of the Old Testament. But I don't know of a better laid out view of the book of 1 and 2 Kings than this one right here. David's done an outstanding job in laying this out in such a way that visually you can look there and you can see the two kings, and that might really, really help you as you study these things. Now let's get back to the questions that are on the cards. And for the sake of our visitors, if you're the first time here, we have a study card that has questions and answers on it. We're trying to learn this, not just for the benefit of having questions and answers, but just so we'll be able to understand and be good students of the Bible. What does 1 Kings tell about? Well, 1 Kings tells about King Solomon and the divided kingdom. We talked about that last week. Look at the second slide. The consequence of Solomon turning from God. I hope in your own words, at least you'll be able to answer that. The consequence of Solomon turning from God was the kingdom was taken away from him and from his sons. And that's important to know. There's the United Kingdom, and then there is the divided kingdom. Then there's the third slide, and that is the map. And that is what happened to Israel when Solomon died. And the answer is the kingdom was divided. The southern kingdom was Judah. The northern kingdom was Israel. Capital of the southern kingdom was Jerusalem. Capital city of the northern kingdom was Samaria. Now the first kings of the divided kingdom, the first king of the northern kingdom was Jeroboam. The first king of the southern kingdom was Rehoboam. Important to keep those straight, and we talked about that last week. And then finally, the reason God that God gave that His people would be carried into captivity, and we could have put this slide in multitudes of places, it's because they were leaving the commandments of God and turning to idolatry. Now then, let's do what we did last week, okay? Let's become the northern and the southern kingdom here. Last week you guys were the northern kingdom. I just want to know how much you remember about you. What is the name of you? By the way, go ahead and, yes, thank you for blacking all of that out. We don't want them to have any clues in relationship. What is the name of your kingdom? Israel. All right. Israel is the name. What is the location of the northern kingdom? Now think about that. The location of the northern kingdom was where?
North.
In the north. How many kings did you have?
19
kings. How many bad kings did you have?
19
bad kings. And I'm going to ask your capital city. Capital city of your kingdom is?
Samaria.
All right. Southern kingdom over here. What's the location of the southern kingdom?
South.
You got that? You're doing really, really well. The capital of the southern kingdom was, the capital city of the southern kingdom was?
Jerusalem.
The name of the southern kingdom?
Judah.
In New Testament, you read that comparable name, Judea. You know, John came preaching in the wilderness of Judea. And so that name is carried over into the New Testament. How many kings did you have?
19
kings. Do you have any good ones? How many good, really, really good kings did you have? You had 4 good kings. I believe tonight we have a visitor. Visitor, would you come on up here? The visitor, the guest that we have, is he sitting back here? Here comes our visitor. Visitors, just come right on up here. I want you to meet this visitor here. Sir, would you come and stand right here? How are you today?
Asa.
Okay. Are you a king?
Asa.
All right. You're a king. Are you a good king?
Asa.
All right. Are you a king of the southern kingdom?
Asa.
And what is your name?
Asa.
The first good king of the 4 good kings is King Asa. Asa, all right. Sir, come on over here. I do not want you to forget the name of that good king. Have you got it? It is not Asa, it is King Asa. All right. You having a problem, sir?
So fat.
So fat.
So fat.
Are you a king, sir?
So fat.
So fat, okay. Are you a king of the southern kingdom?
So fat.
So fat.
So fat.
Are you a good king?
So fat.
Does anybody happen to know what this king's name is of the southern kingdom? Jehoshaphat. Okay, Jehoshaphat. The first good king was who? King Asa. The second good king? Jehoshaphat. Okay, all right. Go on over there, sir. Sir, you seem to have you have a problem right here, right?
Yeah.
You have something.
I has a Kia.
You has what?
I has a Kia.
You has a Kia. Oh, anybody know the name of this king? King Hezekiah. Got it? First good king was what? Asa. Second good king? Jehoshaphat. The third good king?
Hezekiah.
Sir, would you go over here? You okay, sir? Are you a king? King of the southern kingdom, right? I know what you're doing. You're sighing. Ladies and gentlemen, meet King Josiah. That's the best we could do on that one. I'm sorry, okay?
It's his idea.
I, I don't know. No, he doesn't need to. We don't need to encourage him, okay? We don't need to encourage him, okay? I told David before we started, you know, that Bobo's got to be here. He's the only fellow crazy enough to pull this thing off, okay? You got it? It's funny to learn it. It's important to remember those four kings. Four righteous kings of the southern kingdom. King Asa, Jehoshaphat, Hezekiah, and Josiah. That's really, really important. Now, there are 19 kings. And some of those kings are both good and bad. And some of them do some rather remarkable things. But those four kings are four names that you really, really, really need to learn. Asa, Jehoshaphat, Hezekiah, and Josiah. Got it? I hope that you've got it. And I hope that doesn't blow your mind as a way to remember it. But I think it's an interesting way for us to learn those things. All right. I've lost my outline, lost my questions. Where on earth did they go? I don't think I can teach this without my questions, without my outline. This is not them. Here they are right here, okay? Now then, let's go back and focus in on that northern kingdom. We're not going to talk about all 19 kings in that northern kingdom. We want to focus in on the most wicked king of the northern kingdom. Now, you can look down that list of the kings of the northern kingdom. And if you look down this list, how many of these names of the northern kingdom on the left-hand side, how many of those names do you recognize? Well, you hardly recognize any of them. There's the first king, and his name is Jeroboam. By the way, if you look down at king number 13, he's also called Jeroboam. And so there were two king Jeroboams in the northern kingdom. And so just sort of file that away and remember that. But as you look down this, the only king that whose name immediately comes to mind is king number 7. And so whenever you think about the kings and the chronicles and the divided kingdom, do your utmost to think about King Ahab being that wicked king in that northern kingdom and associate him with that northern kingdom. Otherwise, you will just get so confused. The problem that I had for so many years in studying Kings and Chronicles, as you read, that jumps from one kingdom back and forth to the other, and I could not remember anything at all in relationship to this. But the wicked king of the northern kingdom of Israel and his wife, whom you also know, her name is Jezebel. And so you have King Ahab and King and Queen Jezebel in that northern kingdom. Now, as an interesting sidelight of that, as an interesting aspect of that, Ahab and Jezebel has a daughter. And that daughter is married or marries one of the kings of the southern kingdom. That's how the influence of Ahab and Jezebel and all of the ungodliness that was there, that's a part of that intermixing between that northern kingdom of Israel and that southern kingdom of Judah. Ahab is the one who brought the idols into the worship of one particular idol into Israel, and the name of that idol was Baal. And so as you think about Ahab and Jezebel, you'll not read much at all, if anything at all, about Baal, though he, after this period of time, that's what you read. It's always Baal and always worshiping Baal. But prior to this time, you hardly read anything at all about the worship of Baal. Mark down in your mind that the wicked king who brought in the worship of Baal was King Ahab. Now here's an important point to remember in relationship to that, and that is, there are two prophets to the northern kingdom whose name you recognize, but not because they wrote books of the Bible. But I think it's critical to as you think about Ahab and Jezebel, to think about the two prophets that both of them prophesied during the time of Ahab. Now, if I tell you the first one, I'm confident you can get the second one. But the first one is Elijah. And the second of those kings is Elisha. And so as you try to fit in and make all of these Bible stories about Naaman fit somewhere in the Bible, where does Naaman, where does that fit in the Bible? And during that whole period of the story of the Bible, where does all of that fit? And so you've got to, plug that in the right place in relationship to that. Now, it is true that Elisha also prophesied in the reign of some of the kings that came after King Ahab. But Elijah is that prophet who comes, who came before King Ahab, and he prophesied to King Ahab that there would be a drought in the land. One of the questions on the cards is, how long did that drought last? He prayed to God that it might not rain. How long did that northern kingdom of Israel go without rain? Well, I hope that you can guess the answer if you don't know it. It's 3.5 years. 3.5 years. Now, can you imagine what a drought is like in 3.5 years? You think about living here in South Florida, and when we're on water restriction, we go a month and, you know, get hardly any rain at all. Can you imagine if the entire land, a land that flowed with milk and honey, that was so unbelievably productive and abundant, all of a sudden, because of the wickedness of King Ahab, God shut the windows of heaven and it did not rain. That's important. I'll tell you one of the reasons that is important is because Elijah is used in the New Testament as evidence that children of God ought to pray and that prayer makes a difference. Sometimes whenever we read things like this in the Bible, we'd say, oh, well, that's during the days when there were miracles and things of that nature. I mean, and so we just sort of dismiss the answer to prayer. But Elijah goes before King Ahab and as a result of all of that, prays that there might come a drought. And as a result of the prayer of Elijah, it did not rain for 3.5 years. Now here's the interesting thing. The Bible, when it wants to emphasize that the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much, does not use an illustration in the Old Testament of just somebody who prayed 3 times a day like David, or sometime who prayed 3 times a day like Daniel did, but goes back to this very specific story and says Elijah was a man of like passion as us, and he prayed and it did not rain, and therefore you ought to pray. Folks, if that's not an assurance of the fact that we ought to be fervently praying that God will help us. We have Mission Sunday 2 weeks away. What impact would it have if every member of this church, every day for the next 2 weeks, what impact would it have if we prayed, God bless this church on Mission Sunday? Oh, it won't make any difference. Ask Ahab and Jezebel about the prayer of Elijah, whether it made a difference or not. Ask those people who, because of their ungodliness that's up there in that land, in that northern kingdom of Israel, where there are no godly kings and few righteous people, ask them, does it make any difference whether you pray or not? And that 3.5 year drought is used by James in James chapter 5 to say, child of God, you need to pray because Elijah was a man of like passion as we are, and he prayed and God heard his prayer, and the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. We ought to pray more. If that consciousness of that story in the old, and that's why, as we've talked about soldiers of Christ, we're not here just to learn facts. But I think it's critical that we know it didn't rain for 3.5 years. If it hadn't rained for 3.5 hours, okay, doesn't make any difference. Doesn't no indication at all about the prayer. But we ought to recognize that here's a man just like us. And he prayed, and for 3.5 years it did not rain. Well, Elijah left the presence of Ahab. He leaves the city and he goes out beside a brook, and now he's got water beside that brook. Where's his food coming from? There's a drought in the land. Elijah is out there beside that brook that is there, and the animals that brought food to Elijah were the ravens, the birds of the heavens that brought Elijah food. You stop and think about the quantity of food that you've eaten this day or will eat. And imagine being dependent on birds bringing all of that food that would sustain you. It'd take a whole flock for some of us, right? That's a part of the God taking care of a righteous man by the name of Elijah. But then the brook dries up. The brook dries up, and now Elijah does not have any water. So God speaks to Elijah and tells him to leave the northern kingdom of Israel and go up into Syria. There's a place called Zarephath up there. And when he arrives up in Zarephath, there is a widow that has one more meal that she can cook. There she has enough flour and oil to cook the last supper for her and her son. And she's out gathering sticks for that final meal. And Elijah, the prophet, walks up to a Gentile lady, a Syrian, in the city of Zarephath, and says, "Give me food." And somewhere, somehow, because of the way that things work, perhaps her knowledge of Elijah, perhaps her faith in God, perhaps, and you could go all of the perhaps, and when you get to the end of it, you don't know. She went home. And instead of feeding her child and herself with that food, she shared that food with Elijah, and for the rest of the time of that famine, that God multiplied the flour and the oil that she had. That's an amazing story there in and of itself. Here's an interesting question, and we've in here by design, the number of miracles that are recorded by Elijah. You remember Elisha making a request of Elijah? Elisha said to Elijah just before Elijah ascended to heaven in the chariot, Elisha said, "Give me a double portion of your spirit." Do you know how many miracles Elijah did? The answer is 7. Having said what I said by Elisha, would you like to guess how many miracles Elisha did? You got it. 14. And we're at a stopping place, and so we'll stop right here. But you look at the things that included here in those 7 miracles, the increase of the widow's oil for and her son being raised from the dead, the contest that he has with the prophets of Baal, the crossing of the River Jordan whenever the River Jordan opens up, just like the crossing of the Red Sea. Did you know that was in the Bible? Did you know that there was another individual who took and held out something. Actually, he smote the waters with his garment and walked across the Jordan River. Red Sea under Moses, Jordan River under Joshua, and the Jordan River under Elijah. And guess what? Just a few hours later, the Jordan River opened up again and Elisha walked back across the Jordan River. Great stories. And I hope you understand what we're trying to do. We're trying to make us have the ability to just look in the Bible, and so if somebody talks about Elijah or Elisha, we got some association. We know where they fit in the Bible. It's not just some Bible story that we know about. But we have a place to peg that. And I'm telling you, the more details you know, the more details you know, the more likely you are to remember the story. I don't know how to overemphasize that. But, you know, you could know that Jesus fed the multitude, the 5,000, without knowing how many loaves and fishes. But the fact that you know the number of loaves and the number of fishes, and the origin of those of the loaves and the fishes, and the fact that whenever they finished, and the number of baskets full they picked up. All of those are just simply details, but the more I know about that, the better grasp I have of that story and the impact that story has on my life. And the next time you read Kings or Chronicles, or read Kings, 1 and 2 Kings, read about those northern kings and how ungodly and how ungodly and how ungodly and how ungodly they were, and see God's anger at sin. And then see the exaltation that comes about when people try to live righteously. And when in that southern kingdom you have four righteous kings, King Asa, King Jehoshaphat, King Hezekiah, and King Josiah. Let's be students of the Bible and try to learn it the very best that we can. And now let's sing this song of invitation to allow an opportunity for anyone who needs to respond to the invitation to do that. You know, you could become a child of God this night. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, you need to be baptized. Why? Because Jesus said, it's not some Church of Christ rule, this is Jesus. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. You want to be saved? The who that shall be saved is the he who believes and is baptized. Now, you can't be baptized unless you repent. The Bible says repent and be baptized. You've got to make up your mind to do it. And the thing that you need to do is to let everybody know you believe Jesus is the Son of God, and then you can be baptized, and the Lord will add you to His church. He says to those of us who've done that, don't you let up. You be full of faith until you die, and I will give you the crown of life. If you're subject to the invitation, respond now as together we stand and sing. Will you come?